This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. The Academy Award-winning documentarian Julia Reichert dedicated her career to talking about labor issues, how the workplace has changed for blue-collar workers. The movie American Factory, about a Chinese company taking over a GM plant, won the 2019 Oscar for Best Documentary. Well, Julia Reichert died last week. She was 76 years old, and today we'll remember her through two of my interviews with her. I first spoke with Reichert and her husband and filmmaking partner, Stephen Bognar, about American Factory. It's set in Ohio, and it tells the story of an abandoned GM plant that's taken over by the Chinese company Fuyao. Here's an excerpt from our conversation.
Everybody was really, really hard hit by the recession. It was already declining. Wages were already kind of declining and factories were leaving. But that was a really heavy-duty blow. And really, our film starts in 08 on December 23rd when our big General Motors plant closed.
Mm-hmm. So it reopens in 2014. And initially, the workers are really excited. There's all this hubbub and excitement to have the opening and make it look pretty for the opening and invite all these distinguished guests. So initially, what were the hopes amongst the workers for this?
I think the blue-collar Americans really wanted to see if they could have a stable life again, a secure life again, with a good salary, decent benefits, a company they could count on. They hoped they would become good jobs. They hoped there would be a raise in a year and then another raise in a couple of years. That actually didn't happen.
In those early days, it really was an atmosphere of optimism. You know, the Americans, the blue-collar Americans were inviting the Chinese folks over to their house to like ride their Harley-Davidsons or shoot their guns in the backyard or to, you know, have a barbecue. And it was kind of wonderful until the need for profit started putting pressure on everybody. And then that kind of honeymoon phase really ended.
Well, was it surprising for you to see that the workers didn't necessarily bond in opposition to the management demanding that they work longer and harder hours, that the Chinese workers basically allied themselves with the Chinese management?
No, because in China, that's the normal. And, you know, the normal right now in China is long hours, often 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And it was also a sense of mission on behalf of the Chinese folks who came over. They were asked by the chairman to come over and set up what is the largest single glass factory in the world here in Ohio.
Something I was surprised, was really new to me, was the appeals to, we're Chinese, we're all born of Chinese mothers. That kind of sense of nationalism, the way they would have songs that they would sing together and claps that they would do together, I had never experienced that, even as a working class kid in this country. And I think nationalism is what, you know, kind of that idea kind of kept the workers apart. You know, on the one hand, the Chinese management would say, look to everybody, we're all one family. But then on the other hand, they would say to the Chinese workers, well, we're better than them.
There are some interesting scenes that you get, which are extraordinary because they're in Chinese. And one of them was the CEO of this company in America, Jeff Liu. And he basically tells the other Chinese workers how to handle the Americans. And he says, it's like, they're donkeys. Donkeys like being touched in the direction their hair grows. Otherwise, they'll kick you. Basically saying that Americans like to be flattered and complimented, and that's how you should handle them.
Right. And we're raised to be overconfident, super confident. When we got that translation back, it was really like a sort of a jaw dropper.
Yeah. And one of the hard things for American workers after the honeymoon period kind of faded away was they really felt, this is part of the cultural collision or clash even, they really felt disrespected. They felt like they were told, do this, and you just are supposed to do it. You're not supposed to ask why. You're just supposed to do it. And that is really not how American workers are. And American workers are also used to, when they put in a hard shift and they make their numbers, to their supervisors saying, good job, guys, good job. Little pat on the back for the extra work. That just doesn't happen in China. That's not an expectation.
That's part of my conversation with filmmakers Julia Reichert and Stephen Bognar, speaking about their Academy Award-winning documentary, American Factory. I also spoke with them last year about their next film, 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement. That told the story of the first union for women office workers in the 1970s. They were the inspiration for the hit song and movie 9 to 5, starring Jane Fonda, Dolly Parton, and Lily Tomlin.
Women were not actually looked upon as real workers in an office situation. They were looked upon as people who worked for a year or so till they got married or they had kids or whatever. They weren't real workers who needed benefits, who needed a living wage. But they, you know, they had grievances. They were sexually harassed on a rampant level. Their pay was ridiculous. They were asked to do, you know, you see in the film, they were asked to like wash their boss's dentures or sew up their pants. Oh, there are so many examples of the really degrading things. So they decided to try to do something about it. And there were just a few of them, but then it got, the whole concept got more and more popular because so many women felt the same way.
Well, let me play a little archival tape from your movie. There's just a lot of really great archival tape in the film. And here is a piece of tape of a woman describing, you know, why she is fed up.
I'm still listed as a low-income person, even though I work every day of the year.
Do you work for a living?
Yes, I do.
Do you feel chained to your typewriter?
In a way, yes.
My favorite letter that ever came into 9 to 5 says, "We are referred to as girls until the day we retire without pension." I just thought, whoa, in those 10 words, she got it all.
So that's Karen Nussbaum, who founded 9 to 5, speaking at the end there. It's pretty remarkable to think that it wasn't that long ago when women in the workplace were referred to as girls, where they didn't have the same rights as men, and they were treated as kind of like office wives.
Oh, 100%. You know, it was fine for the boss to pat your ass. Certainly you were called my girl. I mean, I was a clerical worker at one point, so I know what that's like. Hmm. But, you know, there's another moment in the film, I don't know if you remember it, where there's a sort of a slowed down where a boss has asked his secretary to sew his pants up, and then he's on TV, and he pulls his secretary toward him laughingly, and we slow it down because her face, this is so felt, made me feel like how that time felt to be a young office worker. And you can see it in that very moment. When I saw that bit of archival footage, when we discovered that, I felt like it encapsulated what it felt like when those questions were first being raised. You weren't comfortable. You were comfortable. Who was I supposed to be in that situation? That's what that woman's going through. And I know what that feels like personally.
Yeah. How much did the movie make people aware of these issues? At 9 to 5, the organization existed before the movie, of course, but the movie was such a hit. And it was a comedy, but how effective was it in conveying the goals of this movement?
The movement had already existed for about 8 or 9 years from its beginning, right? So it already had existed. Jane Fonda happened to be a friend of Karen Nussbaum. And so Jane, of course, very entrepreneurial person, thought, I should make a movie out of the stories that I've been hearing from my friend Karen coming out of actually Cleveland, Ohio. So the movie was a smash hit. It was the second highest grossing film of that year after, what was it?
After The Empire Strikes Back.
Right, it got beat out by The Empire Strikes Back. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's when they really decided, the 9 to 5ers, in a big way, that, you know, we should go for a union, a national union of clerical workers, a woman-led union.
That's the Academy Award-winning filmmakers Julia Reichert and her husband, Stephen Bognar. We're remembering Reichert today. She died from cancer last week. She was 76 years old. Both of her documentaries, American Factory and 9 to 5, The Story of a Movement, are available to stream on Netflix. We'll be right back. Okay, we're going to close out this hour with a little 80s music and a little request for you to go online at kcrw.com/give and become a member of KCRW. Our year-end fundraiser is happening right now, and it is time to donate. It's also time to party, isn't it? Whew, it is time to party. So we're giving you this opportunity for a New Year's Eve extravaganza, a sweepstakes, and it does involve 80s music, yes. So there is a reason why we're playing this. You can experience an unforgettable VIP New Year's Eve celebration at the Bungalow in Santa Monica. And this includes gourmet dinner for four at the Fig restaurant, four tickets plus a VIP table at the New Year's Eve extravaganza, which includes live music playing epic 80s hits, just like the one we're hearing now. Can you imagine? It's going to be incredible. And oh, the next day you'll have breakfast for four, massage and spa treatments, all of it now. You can win it. We're going to pull a winner at the end of the drive, and it can be you. So imagine all the fun you're going to have grooving to the 80s on New Year's Eve. 800-600-5279, kcrw.com/give. Do it now. Become a member. Renew your membership because you love yourself some KCRW, and thank you. Have a great rest of your day. I'm Madeline Brand. I'll see you tomorrow.